Well, the man said, we're gonna start it off. We're gonna start it off. We're gonna start it off. And then he said, we're gonna start it off. We're gonna start it off. We're gonna start it off.
Welcome to episode number 14 of Becoming Who We Are. My name is Cody Stauffer. This is the podcast where we take a look at what it means to be fully human, what it means to be created in the image of God, what it means that God originally judged us as very good when he first created humanity, and what it means to be in the process of always becoming more and more what we were created to be. On this episode, I have Chad Holtz. Chad Holtz, a pastor of a church in Nashville, Tennessee, was a pastor of a church in Nashville, Tennessee, or in the Nashville area. You may recall earlier this year all of the ruckus that was caused by the release of the book Love Wins by Rob Bell, where Rob Bell had the audacity to question the popular understanding of hell and eternal punishment and what happens to everyone after they die. During that whole time period there, this minister, Chad Holtz, posted on his blog a blog post titled, What I Gained by Losing Hell, and his congregation let him go. I was able to interview Chad about a month or month and a half after all that happened. During that whole time, he was getting a lot of attention from Fox News and from other places getting interviewed because it was kind of outstanding that someone who would stand up and defend Rob Bell and share their own viewpoints would get canned over such a thing. He sat down and joined me back in April. He actually joined me right in the middle of a hurricane warning, so that we'll talk about that at the beginning there. You'll notice us talking about that. I want to thank him for sticking tough with me there and letting me interviewing him. Since our interview, a few things have happened in Chad Holtz's life, some tough stuff. If you're following along on his blog, you know what I'm talking about. You can go there and check it out to get caught up. But a lot of topsy-turvy twists and turns happened in his life. A lot by some mistakes, a lot caused by some of the mistakes that he made and that he owned up to and is actually open and honest about on his blog. During our interview, you'll hear him talk about how hell is a reality, can be a reality that we create for ourselves right here. And I don't think that he would shy away from saying that that's exactly what happened in his own life and what he's going through right now, some of the implications and repercussions for some mistakes that he's made. I do want him to know that I am 100% in his corner. We're praying for him. I'm for him and his family and everything that's going on there. But I want to thank him for sitting down and letting me interview him back in April. So here it is, my interview with Chad Holtz. So, hey, so you guys are under tornado warning right now?
Yeah, it's, our kids got released from school early, and it's pretty windy out, but I don't know, they had some really bad storms, I know, coming up through North Alabama and down in Chattanooga, which is just about 30 miles south of us, so I don't know what we're going to get hit with here or not, and hopefully... If we lose connection, that's probably why.
Okay. That's your dedication to this interview. You are going to sit
that's
through
right.
a
that's
tornado.
Right. That's exactly
awesome.
Right.
Perhaps it's God's judgment on you.
It could be, yeah. John Piper might tweet something here, too.
Oh, man. Awesome. Hey, so, Chad, tell us a little bit about yourself, if you want to give just a little bit of a background of your growing up and what got you to where you were questioning hell.
Wow. Okay. Let's see. Well, first of all, hey, thanks for the invite or calling. It's good to get to talk to you. We've been friends for a little while here now, and nice to chat. But I grew up in the church. My dad was a pastor in the Nazarene Church, and which I know that was a commonality between you and I, in that I know about where you went to school. And so I grew up in the Nazarene Church. He was a pastor, oldest of four kids I am, and we moved a lot. Dad did some church plants and different things like that, and always believed sort of the party line, the traditional view, which is there is an eternal hell and there's an eternal heaven, and which place you end up in is dependent upon your acceptance of the gospel, your acceptance of Jesus as your personal savior. And I have been a Christian pretty much all my life, I guess. I remember youth camps and going to movie nights where a revivalist like preaching would happen, and a movie would be shown of a young person choosing not to go to the altar that night and going forward, and a lot of her friends would go forward, and she would end up succumbing to a tragic death on her way home, though usually I think it was a train wreck.
Or a tornado.
Jackknife. Or tornado, yeah. Take her car off, and the next scene would be she would wake up in a burning hell and screaming out the question, why me, why me, why didn't I go forward when I had the chance? And after which, there'd be a rush to the altar, and everyone wanted to miss what happened to her. So that's how I really kind of committed my life to Jesus, and felt this sort of cathartic release of a great relief, I guess, that I somehow missed such a terrible fate. And that sort of carried with me for a long time. How that started changing just a number of reasons. I've written about several of these things on my blog, which I guess some people have perhaps read, but I joined the Navy. I traveled around the world. I met people of different faiths, different religions, talked to Muslims, had dinner with Muslims who beforehand I had been told were evil. This was all prior to September 11th, 2001, but nevertheless, they were still people of a different faith and tradition, and they were going to hell. But really, Cody, I guess a lot of it had to do with coming to face to face with my own sinfulness, and what I began to see was the absurdity as well as the arrogance for me to assume that I have an eternity waiting for me in heaven simply because I had the good fortune of getting to hear about Jesus. And yet my life, in many respects, was very much not one that I would call Christian. And the own sinfulness that I knew was very present when I looked myself in the mirror. To think that God would save me simply because I believe that Jesus is the Son of God and died for my sins seemed very hollow and shallow. And so I began exploring and being open to the idea that maybe God's plan is bigger than just trying to convince people to check on the dotted line, or that yes, I believe in you.
Sure.
Therefore, you get to heaven.
Right. You're an adoptive father, correct?
I am, and that's another issue.
Yes, yeah, so I want to hear about that. How does that figure in?
Yeah, great. I'm really glad you asked that question because my wife and I are in the process right now of working on a ministry. An adoptive ministry, an orphan ministry for people in Ethiopia, where two of our children are from. And we adopted 3 years ago. It'll be 3 years in May. And that probably, theologically, that has a whole lot of significance for me. In that we, Sophie and Eli are our children's names, and they had no choice in the matter of who was going to be their parents. There was nothing they did that made us choose them. And they are our kids. We are, whether they want to acknowledge it or not, we are their mother and their father. And in a lot of ways, I think that's sort of analogous of what we are as God's children. God is our father, whether we want to acknowledge that or not. I remember the day we picked them up in Ethiopia, and Sophie ran into Amy's arms, my wife, and jumped right into her arms, kissed her on the cheek, and said, "Hi, Mama." And it's quite a moment. Eli, on the other hand, he stayed in the van for a little while. He didn't get out. He was very shy and very standoffish, and I had to actually go to him. I had to kneel down and put my arms around him, and he was stiff as a board, and he was very non-compliant. And Eli took a while. He had a lot of, and he still does. He has a lot of things to work through. There's a lot of barriers there for him to be able to accept the idea that he is loved and cherished and that he is safe in this home. Sophie kind of reminds me of myself growing up in the church. I had very few barriers to kind of understanding that God loves me. And Eli, I think, represents the bulk of the world, and certainly the number of people that I'm in contact with nowadays who write me all the time to say, you know, how could God love me when I've done this? Or how is God good when I've been exposed to so much pain and hurt? And, you know, there's a lot of barriers for them to accept that they have a Father in heaven who loves them.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. I was imagining that had a huge part to play. When you were kind of developing your thoughts on hell and kind of moving away from what was your traditional or fundamentalist view of it, was it a long process? Did it happen kind of quickly? Or I mean, I know the post came up, and that was kind of the trigger for a lot of things. But prior to that, there had to have been a lot of working out what you were thinking and where you're coming from.
Yeah, it was probably over the process of a couple of years, and like all these different events, they were like chipping away at that armor that I had, or the security blanket that I had.
Were you ever afraid of where you were going?
Yeah, and I still am. it's scary. It's terrifying. There were times where it was a lot more scary than others. There were moments where I felt like I was losing my faith, and there were moments where I too. One of the biggest flashbacks I've seen is sort of this idea of if you lose hell, then there's therefore no reason to be a Christian. And I wrestled with that. I wondered, okay, why then am I a Christian? I think what I had to come and admit was I don't really love Jesus. I gave lip service to that for so long because I thought that's what I needed to say in order to get to heaven, and I certainly didn't want to go to hell.
Right.
But when I took that option out, I had to really examine my own life and say, you know what, I say I love Jesus, but really, I'm just using Jesus. And that was tough to admit. It was tough to admit that for 36 years, I've been using Jesus as a tool. My friend Ted, if he listens, he's going to love that I just dropped that word in because that's his favorite word for me. I've been using Jesus as a tool to get me something. And I had to find a whole new reason to follow So that was like a wilderness experience for me for a while. Yeah.
I know, see, and I've never gone as, me personally, these are things I'm obviously still wrestling with too, and issues that I have. But even when I've actually even brought up the idea that, maybe hell isn't what we thought it is, or maybe, it's something different, the one of the first things people always say then, well, then why did Jesus come? And then why did he die on the cross? It makes it all pointless. What do you, have you ever had someone ask that? And what do you say to a question like that?
Never, Cody.
I don't believe you.
Someone asked me that. I had the pleasure of getting to speak at a religion class at University of Tennessee in Chattanooga, and someone asked me that very question. And it's I think the reason Jesus came and died and rose again, and I believe all of that, was so that I didn't have to, so that I don't have to believe in hell, so that I can believe that hell was defeated, so that I can believe that it was finished, the work that Jesus came to do was truly completed, and that there's nothing I can add to that, there's nothing I can do to take away from that or diminish it, and that God cares deeply, passionately about his creation, about you and I, and about all of us, and that God intends to take all of this somewhere and wants to redeem and restore all of it. I don't need to believe in hell to believe any of that. Rather, I can believe that God is love, that God is going to bring the world to rights, and that this is really truly good news.
Yeah. What do you say when someone asks, well then, what was Jesus talking about when he taught about hell? Because a lot of people like to claim, Jesus is the person who taught about hell the most, and he taught about or talked about hell more than anything, which, I don't think is true, but still that's something they bring up. So how do you deal with that?
Yeah, it's interesting, that's always, he talked about the kingdom of God more than anything. He talked about money more than he talked about hell and how we manage our money. He talked about humility quite a lot. He talked about love a lot. It's funny, the Sermon on the Mount is something that I used to think, most of us as Christians, I think we it's good enough just to believe that Jesus said that, but we don't really have to embody it. Jesus did talk about hell, but it was different. It was, and I know I'm not telling you anything you don't already know, but Gehenna is the word he most commonly used. It's a literal trash heap, a dump outside of Jerusalem, that when he said Gehenna, people knew exactly where he was talking about. When he talks about hell, he's talking about it to Israel. He's talking about it to fellow Jews, his family, people who ought to know better, who were the chosen people, who are called in Exodus the Son of God, all of Israel, whom Paul also says later, all of Israel will be saved. So Jesus has given some dire warnings that our choices that we make today do have consequences. They matter. I meet people all the time, as I'm sure you do, who deny the truth about themselves. They deny the fact that they are a child of God, they are loved by God, that they don't have to cling to these other idols for life. And they're living in hell. They're whether it be addictions or whether it be relational problems, whether it be money or career, all these things that are killing them. Look at globally, war and the way we oppress people economically, and famine and poverty, orphans, the amount of orphans that we neglect and the widows that we neglect, all because of our own sinfulness, it brings a hell on earth. And so I think Jesus was very right to warn us of all of that, that our actions have consequences, and We ought to take heed of that.
Yeah. Why do you think? So, you know, I'm your friend on Facebook, so I see some of your invitations that you have. I mean, you're a mover and a shaker now, man. Is there a point? I mean, obviously, with the conjunction with the release of Rob Bell's book, I mean that plays into it. But I mean, for instance, Carlton Pearson, I'm sure you've heard of him. Yes, just a few years ago. I mean, he had a little bit of a stage, got some notice, but it seems like just right now is a time where people are really asking this question. Why do you think that is?
I think we have been gearing up for a while now for a sort of a reformation going on within evangelical Christianity. This is really not much news for mainline people generally, and but there's been this sort of ongoing tension between what does it mean to be an evangelical, and I think Rob Bell being very popular has brought a lot of attention to this issue. And the question of why am I a Christian, I think, is a question that every one of us ought to be asking. And I think this issue illuminates that question very well, because it kind of disarms us of all of the stuff that we've kind of been growing up with. Like for me, I had to realizing that I was using Jesus as a tool to get into heaven. So coming to terms with that, and then saying, okay, well, what are we doing as a church? What are we doing as Christians? What does it mean really to confess in Jesus as your Lord? All of these things are wrapped up in this. And then how does this play out in all sorts of ways? Like how do we treat people who are unlike us, who think differently than like us? How does this work in a pluralistic society that we live in? We live in a very non-Christian culture today in America, which is very different from what it was 50 years ago. And we're starting to wake up to that fact, and thankfully. So yeah, I think it's just kind of all come to a head at a right time, and I'm grateful for it. I'm grateful for the discussions that it's starting, and I'm humbled to be just have a little small part of all of that. It's been really eye-opening.
And I, as you were answering, I was thinking, really, if you think about it, you focus on Jesus's teachings, which are not obviously self-centered and those kind of things. You would think that over time, this should almost be inevitable. If you're focusing on the teachings of Jesus, at some point, you might find yourself asking, well, then the way I'm looking at the very way I approach Jesus and Jesus's teachings, which, just as you said, as a tool, very, and I've used the term, it's a self-centered, gospel, or it's about me and what I can do to get to, so I can avoid hell and those kind of things. And you would think that over time, just by exposing yourself to the teachings of Jesus over and over and over, at some point there should inevitably be a progression away from a self-centered focus to a more other-centered, I guess, focus.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't agree more.
Do you what in this whole process, what's been like the biggest, who's been the biggest surprise to you? Like you maybe someone who's reached out to you that you're like, I could have swore that person would have not been in my corner. No one? That's not good.
There's this guy named Cody Stauffer.
You're well. If that's the best that you can get, you're in a world of hurt, man.
So many people have actually come out of the closet, so to speak, and to say thank you, thank you, thank you for speaking up.
Do you have how about anyone who's been like, thanks for speaking up. I'm not ready to myself. Maybe someday I'll join you.
Yeah, a few of them. Can I name them right now?
Do you, I don't know if you want
No,
to.
I'm
Yeah,
kidding.
go ahead.
Yeah, there's been a few of those, several of them, pastors and so forth, who have thanked me for saying what they've wanted to say but can't, but hope that they one day can. There's been a lot of that. The biggest surprise, I guess, has just been how surprising the good news is to so many people in our culture. For me, kind of living in this for several years, I sort of take for granted that it's sort of something that everyone knows, that this is what the gospel is. And but that's so not true. And as pastors, and what I would want to encourage people in churches and church leaders and teachers of the Bible, share the good news, proclaim it loudly, tell people about it, because the message is getting lost in translation. The bulk of the non-Christian world, and even the bulk of the people sitting in our pews, they truly do believe that the whole message and purpose of Christianity is to save you from eternity in hell after you die. And the more I've been talking about this, the emails flood in every day from people from around the world who say, really, this is what the good news is? This is what Jesus is teaching? Because if that's the case, I may stop being an atheist, or I may go to church this weekend, or I may become a Christian. That sounds like something I want to become a part of and give my life to. That has been the most surprising thing to me, just how surprised other people are by this good news.
Do you have any suggestions, say, for a congregation that is seriously considering at least preparing themselves for maybe an influx of people who, I mean, because if they're hearing this for the first time and they are saying, well, you know what, this is something I can give a try. Do you have any advice for a congregation that might be preparing? Perhaps they're right in the middle of a really good location where maybe there are a lot of people questioning and asking these questions and want to seek out some answers from a church. Do you have any words of advice for a congregation or a church or a pastor?
That's a really great question, Cody, because I do get emails, a lot of them, people asking me, where can I find a church in my area that teaches this or thinks like this? Because most of these people, I get the impression that they've been hurt by church, they've been ostracized from church, and so they're hungry for something more. And my advice, I guess, to churches would be to just preach the gospel, preach the good news, put it out on your signs, put it out on your, put a banner up outside, say, all are welcome here, grace, love wins. I mean, try that. Rob Bell's got enough attention that just saying love wins, that might work. That could be code word for churches that are, back in the first century, they put a little fish or something on the outside their door to let people know that this was a Christian gathering. So put the words "Love Wins" on your front door, and maybe that'll work.
Yeah. Now on the flip side, what about for a minister who is in a congregation that maybe isn't ready for that, but perhaps he or she is leaning that way? And you can obviously speak from experience here. what kind of path should they choose, do you think? Should they just be outright
with it? Write a
blog post. Yeah, I was going to say, should they just be right out front with it? Or?
I wouldn't want to tell. I guess I would want to say, use discretion. Be loving in your words and in your actions. Do not be. When I posted what I posted, I didn't really think anyone was really reading, and secondly, I thought if anyone did disagree with this, hopefully we could have a talk about it. What I would do differently, I guess, is, and if I wanted to do something now, if I was in a church, I would gather a few people together, a few of the leaders of the church, a few of the the people who are part of Sunday school or Bible studies and are active, and I would ask them to come and sit down with me for some coffee and chats for a couple weeks, and maybe go through a book, maybe sit down and go through a book like Will Willimon's Who Will Be Saved. It's a wonderful book, or read Rob Bell's Love Wins and talk about it, and maybe say, you know, as your pastor, I'm working on this and myself, and just lay it out there to some people and let them also wrestle with you through it, rather than maybe just coming out and saying, this is what I think now, and you all need to get on board. So, and be patient. It took me a couple years to kind of evolve and come through. Evolve. I hate that word. It's an arrogant word in the sense that I don't mean it that way. But
that you're now a higher life form now.
Right. But it took a couple years for my thinking to kind of change on this. And I still, you know, people are asking some great questions, and people send me comments on my blog or email me things that make me stop and make me think. All of that stuff, though, I think it in a sense, it stops me in my tracks, but it also confirms, wow, I better at least hope that this is right. Because if not, if it depends fully on my getting my thoughts right about this, and goodness gracious, what kind of God is it that we say we worship? That could be a scary thing.
Do you find that there are people who, while they don't agree with you, are at least giving you the room to work through this, and maybe even they say, you know what, we're never going to agree, but we can still be friends?
Well, I have a lot of room to work through this now because I'm not actually a pastor at church, so I have all the space I need. I have good, very, very good friends who disagree. I have family who disagree with me. We're still family and we're still very good friends. What I said in my closing sermon, my last sermon at my church, when I shared Eucharist with the church, I said at this table represents the body and blood of Christ represent that what unites us far outweighs and far surpasses anything that could ever possibly divide us. And I believe that. I believe it with all my heart, with all my soul, with all my mind. And I hope that that's what churches grasp and hold on to, that we're united in Christ. We are one in Christ. This is true about us. One thing we need to do as a church is we need to learn how to live together in unity and in harmony, despite our many differences and disagreements, because in that itself is a witness to a disbelieving and a cynical world that God is bigger than all of this and us. But when we fight and when we disagree and we say, I'm going to leave you, or you're no longer, or we tweet farewell. You know, when we do those kind of things, a watching, cynical, disbelieving world looks and says, this Jesus that they all claim to follow really isn't any better or any different than what I follow. It really doesn't change their lives. It doesn't really make them die to themselves and make them any more humble. It's really all just a joke.
Yeah.
And I think that's a travesty.
Yeah. Speaking of Rob Bell, you got a chance to meet him, right?
Yeah.
Was that pretty sweet?
Well, it's the only reason I did all of this.
Nice.
I did tell. I told him that he asked me when we first met. He said, so what? How does all of this happen? I said, well, this is all just one elaborate plan to get to meet you. And he laughed and he said, well, it could have been so much easier. You could have just emailed me. No, it was great. Yeah, it was really nice to meet. We got to sit down for about 30, 45 minutes, had a meal and chatted, and he's a great guy. He's everything I guess I should have assumed him to be in person. I have been following him for listening to his sermons and reading his books for 7 years now, I guess. And, so it was great to finally meet someone who's had a huge impact on my faith journey in many ways.
Did you, when you guys were talking, did you find any, because he doesn't completely do away with hell, right? And it seems like maybe you are, or do you guys, are you simpatico on that, do you think?
I probably shouldn't, I think Rob and I have a lot in common.
Okay.
I think Rob is a wonderful pastor, and I think, the position he lays out in his book is a wonderful way to pastorally consider this and to pastorally invite a congregation into a conversation.
Yeah.
And, so I think he's done a brilliant job at that.
Awesome. Are there, who else has, aside from Rob Bell, who else has kind of shaped you on this journey a little bit? I mean, you mentioned Will Willimon a little bit. Anyone else?
Yeah, that was huge. His book, and partly because he's a bishop in the United Methodist Church, of which I'm a part, and so his voice in that has been crucial. Karl Barth, reading Karl Barth has revolutionized sort of a lot of my thinking and my theology. Karl Barth and Will Willimon. I read a lot of it. I've read N.T. Wright for a long time. N.T. Wright doesn't, as you know, doesn't go as far as what I would go, or even what maybe Rob Bell suggests. But I think he's wonderful, and has an influence on me.
So where do you think you're gonna go from here? I mean, have you thought about it, or is it just you're taking it one day at a time right now?
Yeah, taking it kind of one day at a time. I'm doing some work selling some life insurance here that I'm hopefully going to be getting started at soon. We just moved into a new house here in Tennessee.
That's kind of ironic.
It is ironic, yeah. Yeah, it's very ironic. But necessary to put some food on the table. But it's also great because it liberates my schedule up to allow me to do some other things. I'm working on a book. Doing some speaking engagements and doing some conferences through the summer and in the fall, and just sort of taking it day by day. And God has been faithful and good, and we're just sort of in awe of some of the doors that are opening up and some of the great people we've gotten to meet through all of this. It's been a wild ride, but we're grateful for it.
How can people connect with you or follow along on your journey?
Well, probably the easiest way is through Facebook or my blog at chadholtz.net. And that's probably the two easiest ways.
Yeah. And the book you're working on is?
Tentatively titled is Dancing on Hell, which plays off of my blog name, which is Dancing on Saturday.
Awesome. I look forward to it, man.
Well, thank you.
And I want to let you know, again, thanks for joining us. And also, when you get closer to the book, we'd love to have you back on to talk about it a little bit.
Well, that'd be great, Cody. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
And after the storm, I run and run as the rains come, and I look up, I look up. On my knees and out of luck, I look up. Night has always pushed up day. You must know life to see decay, but I won't rot. I won't rot. Not in this mind and not in this heart, I won't rot. And I took you by the hand, and we stood tall, and remember. remembered our own land, what we live for. But there will come a time you'll see, with no more tears, and love will not break your heart, but dismiss your fears, get over your hill and see what you find there with grace in your heart and flowers in your hair.
My thanks again to Chad for sitting down with me back in April and letting me interview him. Once again, as I mentioned at the beginning, of course, he's had some twists and turns since then, and you can follow along his journey. He's gutsy, he's open, he's real, he's honest, and he's completely in the hands of God right now, relying fully on God through the thick and thin of what is going on in his life. Great stuff he's posted over there. Asks a lot of great questions. His blog is, like you mentioned, www.chadholtz.net. It's called Dancing on Saturday. I'm sure right now the writing and things are kind of on hold for the book that he mentions. I don't have any updates on that, but definitely love to have him on the show again. I want to thank him again for stepping up and letting me interview him back in April, and for his patience, me getting it up here just now. I do want to put it out there for my readers. You know, throughout this last year, of course, the controversy of the Love Wins books, the questions about hell, eternal punishment, what it means, the words, you know, all the words that surround the idea of hell in the Bible, Jesus' teachings. I'd love to get your opinion, your thoughts. What have you thought about the controversy? What have you thought? What are your thoughts on hell and punishment and final destinations and eternal life and eternal punishment and those kind of things? I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to get a comment. You can email us at wearebecoming@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook under you can find us linked up on the page there. Of course, you can comment on the podcast, or you can even find us on Skype, Cody.Stauffer. Let us know what your thoughts are on Twitter, of course. Love to get your opinions and thoughts and perspectives on hell, heaven, and everything else. It's been kind of a hot topic this year. Again, thank you, Chad Holtz. I really appreciate your time. Thank you to my listeners. And remember, life is change. Growth is optional. Choose wisely.
Please remember me when I'm gone. Smile when you think about me singing you this song. And I will look above the clouds into the great mysterious blue and think about you singing along. Now, when I'm looking at you, all I see is a melody arranged in triplet form, sung so soft. And so it seems, even if I lose the moment or the tune, I'll think about you singing to me. La 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 la. La 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 la. La 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 la. Remember me.